Are you ready, Patty? Committee of the Whole come to order. We have a privileged floor asked for by Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to point out one of our commissioners from Weston County has made her way down here for the day, and so I'd like to welcome Marty Oatman back in the fishbowl. Thank you.
Welcome here. Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
You sure can, and goodies coming with this one, too?
No goodies.
Oh, okay.
This one. It's not often I have a constituent that is also a clerk of district court from Sweetwater County. Please welcome in the fishbowl Donna Lee Bobek.
Welcome, welcome. And Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
Sure can.
I'd just like to welcome all the rest of the clerks of district court, including my district court clerk, Patra Lindenthal. So if you could all please stand up and welcome to the House.
We welcome you, clerks. We count on you, your advice. Thanks for being here. Representative Swanitzer. Oh, excuse me. Any other privileges? Okay. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 37. The reading clerk will read the bill if he's here.
Oh, man, I've got feelings, you know. Senate File 37 from corporations, an act relating to boards and commissions, modifying the political party affiliation requirements on specified boards and commissions, removing party affiliation requirements from specified boards and commissions, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 37 engrossed boards and commissions party affiliation, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that a do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, and Dan Zwanitzer. Gay voted no. Signed by Representative Dan Zwanitzer, Chairman, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming.
You've heard reading the bill. What is your pleasure, Representative Chairman Swanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 37 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, which I will probably get to at the very end of explaining the bill. Members, you will see a piece of paper, hopefully in your desk from right before lunch, that says Senate File 37 on the top. This is what we're amending, and if you want to follow along. So you all remember we brought a couple bills last year on trying to change the political affiliations and trying to hold the executive branch a little more accountable for making sure the people who were appointed to some of the boards and commissions couldn't change their political party affiliation during their term of 4 or 6 or 8 years on a board. When we really got down to an interim, we decided that maybe that wasn't the problem so much as trying to find the right people in the right communities of the state was more of an issue. And so we did have two bills we considered an interim, one on geographical representation that didn't make it through our interim process because it was too lengthy, but the political affiliation for boards and commissions of the state did. So in front of you, both in Senate File 37 and on that extra sheet, you'll see all the boards and commissions of the state that have a political affiliation break. And so I've tried to list for you all what we're trying to do and how this would change from the current way we do business and moving to a 75% threshold of what this bill would allow. Going through quickly, I thought about going through every board and commission. I'd be happy to if you have specific questions, but the list is there in front of you. You'll see in most cases the change to 75% of the board or commission membership of one political party really only raises it one, possibly two members. You will see that we've gone with six boards being nonpartisan: the Board of Geological Surveyors, the Aeronautics Commission, the Paramutual Commission, the Telecommunications Commission, the State Board of Outfitters and Guides, the Nursing Home Administrators Board, and DEQ has several boards of five members for air quality, land quality, and water quality. So in our interim discussions and with the other body, we decided, at least we felt at the current time, that these are not really boards that require a political party division anymore. The only other notable thing I would mention is on the Transportation Commission, their current makeup says not all members can be the same political party, so we're actually tightening that up to 75%. In all other instances, as long as it's not a three-member board, we are increasing the threshold. On the Standing Committee amendment in front of you, you'll see a difference of opinion that we have with the other body, and I might get resolved in conference committee, or we might resolve it on the second or third reading. Both are two boards of the state, the Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust and the Parks and Cultural Resource Commission. Your House Corporations Committee felt, and with the amendment, the Standing Committee amendment before you, that these should have some type of political party representation. So the other body, not that I should refer to them, but the change in the bill from how it was in the interim when it came over, we had made, they had been nonpartisan. They took it up, taken off all of the party affiliation. In discussions in the committee, we felt that these two entities, first, the State Parks and Cultural Resource Board is made up of a wide variety of diverse opinions from everything from archaeology, SHPO activities to the recreational aspects. The other standing committee memo on the Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Board, if you looked at that language in front of you in the bill in 915-104, it has a pretty broad array of diverse mindsets on people who are concerned with the wildlife aspect, the hunting aspect, the water quality aspect, et cetera. And so at this time, I would move the standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 37, and maybe we can get that out of the way, Mr. Chairman, before I proceed. So I'd call for the question on standing committee amendment number 1.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Is there any discussion? You ready for the question? Question have been called. We're on standing committee. All those that are in favor of standing committee 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Standing committee amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think I have anything off the top of my head, but if anybody has any questions on why the interim committee took the step they did on the political affiliations of any of these boards or commissions, I would be happy to answer them.
Minority Floor Leader Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would really appreciate knowing the specific testimony and data that was presented to the committee over the interim to show that this would really solve a problem with the boards and commissions. It's my understanding that you really need to look at the whole picture, and doing it piecemeal is not going to solve the problem, and meaning not looking at the districts and the other components. But the first question is really, I want to know hard facts and testimony from the executive branch saying that this bill was needed in order for them to fulfill needed positions.
Representative Swanter, do you like to answer that, or are you ready for another?
I'll take that one, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
And so as far as hard data, I would say the chief executive did have staff members come to our August meeting in Buffalo and did testify on some of the difficulties they've had in filling these positions. Many of you remember last year when we saw the list of appointments, three of them were unfilled. Not stating they were necessarily party affiliated with those three, but there has been a significant amount of discussion when you have a party split and a geographical split and then a demographic or a licensing split of a certain occupation or a certain licensure that someone has to have, that it has made it increasingly difficult. And so while we did try to tackle the larger issue also of geographical diversity, we did feel that was a little bit of a larger issue than we could tackle in the interim, but we did approve this bill to do one step forward. And this does not solve the full problem, I agree, of many of the boards and commissions or the problem that we have in filling a lot of those appointments. But what it does set out to do is make it a little bit easier in some instances on these 23 boards or commissions to help the chief executive in filling the appointments in a timely manner.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the bringer could explain how they split the people. When you do the mathematical equation, a lot of these come out to be a 4.25 or a 4.5 or a 4.75 members is 75% of that board composition. And when you look at it, if you use the summary sheet, which is not included within this bill, Sometimes a 0.25 person ended up being an additional person, whereas a 0.5 person ended up being staying at the lower number, or a 0.75 person ended up at the lower number. So unless you use this summary sheet or somehow attach this summary sheet to the legislation, I don't know how this 75% really fixes the problem, because you still don't know if it's a round up or round down.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to answer that last question, and you can see any time it's mentioned on the 75%, it says not more than. So with it being a not more than, it's always going to be a round down. And that's throughout this bill. Thank you.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll frame this as a question, but I'll preface it by saying I have concerns with this bill. I don't think it's truly addressing the problems we have. But my question is, was any consideration given to how we notify the people of Wyoming that a vacancy exists on a board? I actually, prior to being elected as a representative, served on one of these commissions, and I had to do a fair amount of work on my own just to ascertain that there was actually a vacancy to apply for. And I'm imagining that that's true for most people in the state who might be interested. So I would like to know if any consideration was given to that particular issue. Thank you.
Representative Swanager, Chairman Swanager.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the quick and simple answer is no, not really. We did talk with the executive branch, and I think in the discussions it really, at least in our committee's purview, was that it's an executive branch function to go out and locate people for these boards and commissions. The legislative branch sets them up statutorily, but we don't have any type of promotion budget or staff that it's under our role to go advertise or go try to recruit. We leave that to the chief executive officer, and he actually has positions that we've given him in his office who oversee boards and commissions in the state.
Minority Whip Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an interesting piece of legislation because the origins of it are just kind of fuzzy. I don't believe that the executive was very high on their agenda, if they really needed it at all. So for us to come out and try to make these changes in anything, I really wonder whether we're on the right track or not. In the course of the hearings, the executive only showed up once, and their testimony was really not that compelling as whether these changes were actually needed or not. They were more concerned with the overall, that they just couldn't get people for boards and commissions across the board. Breaking it down by political makeup seemed like it was a secondary portion of the conversation. So based on that, I think this whole bill is fairly ill-conceived and should probably be voted down.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My issue with this is narrowed down to 24-2-101. It begins on line 16 of page 14 and up through line 13 on page 15. And that deals with the Transportation Commission. I think, I'm not positive of this, but I think at one time there was no partisan requirement involved, and they changed it to equal one at least one of both parties. And we went through an issue last year when my county was up, it was our turn, I guess you might call it, and we had unbelievable problems with this. And I think there's a reason why it was the way it was, and this is going to make it that much harder to fill these slots with the people that want to get on there or want to serve. And so I would recommend we just take that one out. After all, it's the only one you're making more stringent instead of less stringent. So I appreciate that.
Chairman Swanager.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I completely agree with the good chairman of revenue. We were really just trying for consistency to look at all of the boards with a political party split and say, do you need a partisan split? And if so, we were trying to be consistent with a 75% across the board. This was the one instance, as I mentioned, that we actually made it more restrictive. And so I personally would certainly be friendly to an amendment on second or third reading to put it back to the current language. I would like to remind the body, these are not superbly massive changes. I mean, it's a good first step. We're loosening up the political affiliations, usually by one, possibly two board members. I don't know how to testify on how compelled people felt at the Buffalo interim meeting. I thought it was slightly compelling myself that we had to do something in this area, and I think we will continue to look at all of these boards and commissions as we move forward and see if we can continue to both update and increase participation and loosen restrictions to find the best qualified people in Wyoming.
Minority Floor Leader Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, these boards and commissions, a lot of them have been around practically the entire period of statehood, or at least, you know, more than 50 years. So my question is, was there any research into the history of these various boards and commissions and what the requirements have been from the beginning? Because I think in at least some of them, these have pretty much been the requirements from the beginning. And so I think we would need to have a compelling reason for changing them now. And I have yet to hear a compelling reason.
You ready? Okay, Representative Kirkbride.
I'll give the reason. I don't know if it's compelling or not. I have a friend who was in the legislature probably 15 years ago when he started his career. He said the mix in the body at that time was 32 and 28. And as you can see, that's not the mix anymore. Sort of the geopolitical demographics of the state have changed. There's three things I thought were valuable about the bill. Mainly it's about flexibility, giving the executive branch the flexibility to fill these 1,400 board positions with good people, sort of irregardless of their political background. The wording suggests that the not more than 75% of the party doesn't necessarily guarantee that the board will be packed with 75% from one party in every case. It can be a 50-50 split. Some cases you could have a governor from what is, in theory, the minority party appoint 75-25 the other way. So there's a lot of flexibility in there, and that was the main point of it. And I also think that by changing this and giving them a little more wiggle room in the appointments, we may be able to get by without making extensive changes to the geographical and occupational splits. This may be what it takes to make it work for the executive office.
Speaker Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, Mr. Chairman, if I had 15% of the membership in here and I was in this body and I was getting 50% of the appointments, I guess I'd be fighting like crazy too, and that's what I hear going on back in that corner. Now look, it says not more than 75%. It doesn't say 75%. I can tell you there's been great difficulty on some of these boards and commissions finding somebody that fits through the matrix. And if you get two or three levels, it gets worse. Like, for instance, the University of Board of Trustees, first it has to go by appointment districts. Then you have to lay another layer on there, which is this party thing. And then there's a de facto another layer that's been laid on there that the chief executive struggled with, and that's gender. And so you get, by the time you work your way through all those matrices, and I went into his office one day, and he said, you know how many of the minority party there are in this one county? And he told me, he said he knew exactly how many they were, and he said they're not all one gender. And it was a surprisingly small number. So he has had some real difficulty, and what this does is increase the flexibility of the chief executive. And I don't care which way the politics cut. This says not more than 75%, so he can't totally overload it with his party, no matter which party. You know, when I was a kid, the other party ruled the state, not us. A lot of people here don't remember that. I remember that. And that was a kickback. If you study history and really look at it, there was a kickback that was a backlash to a famous war in that representative over there county that ricocheted clear through to the into the 1950s. And so this state was controlled by the other party. But the other party would have the same problem. And so what it does, it says not more than 75%. You can't completely stack it with your own people, but you can give more consideration to the merits and the qualifications of the people and not be so constrained by this party 50-50 split on things. And so I think this bill is really a good deal for both parties.
Minority Floor Leader Throne.
Well, if we're going to discuss history, in the 1920s, there was one member of this party, or of this body, of the minority party, and he went on to become a famous trust buster in the New Deal and founded one of the nation's capital's leading law firms that's still in existence today, and he used to joke that he could caucus in a phone booth. But I am guessing, and maybe someone can tell me, that the statutes that we're talking about for the older historic boards were exactly the same as they are today. And if I'm wrong about that, you can correct me, and I know that the good chairman of corporations is better at history than I am, so maybe that's what he's going to do.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So by my calculation, the executive branch, or the executive, has over 1,000 appointments to make on these boards and commissions, because I believe there's 187 of those boards and commissions. So if you do the math, that's a lot of people that have a profound effect with these rules. Rules are, and regulations are, the force of law. So therefore, this can't just be slapped together. It has to have the best people, the best criteria, the best motivation, the time available, and the experience and the expertise. So I like this, on and for this bill, and I think it's a good fix, because my anecdotal experiences with two boards in several administrations, and the common complaint is we can't find enough good people given the geographic and the political constraints. So I think this frees that up so that we can get better qualified people in these positions that do have an effect on people's lives daily. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Swanser.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And I could, if you want to go, I can probably give you the decades since statehood and some right at the time of statehood of each of these boards and commissions. Some really are that old. Some actually have been around less than 4 or 5 years. And I would more than welcome, if there's anything on this list as you go through the bill, if there's a certain board or commission you want to discuss, I think we'll have time. Bring a second or third reading amendment, assuming it passes general file, and we can discuss the merits of the board, at least for the political affiliation of it. I do believe that there's more good than bad in this. Me personally wanted a special board and commission task force. You'd never guess, but that just didn't go through my committee because nobody wants another task force. But, no, I am excited, and I do think the House position is even stronger. You'll notice we did put political affiliations back in two of the boards, at least because that was the purview in the House. So I would be happy to entertain any more questions, but I would prefer if you have a specific board or commission, bring in a second reading, and we'll discuss it then.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Swanitzer's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 37 do pass. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed?
No.
Senate File 37 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 30. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 30 from the Management Council, an act relating to elections, modifying procedures relating to the submission, review, and approval of statewide initiative petitions, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, corporations, elections, and political subdivisions to whom is referred Senate File 30 respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, Danswanitzer, Gay voted no, signed by Representative Kirkbride, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Kirkbride?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chairman, as it were. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 30 do pass, and I'll provide the explanation on the bill. Senate File 30 initiative review process is some changes in Elections Title 22, and they're designed to clarify expectations of bill structure and timelines relative to the initiative process. It would probably mainly affect three groups. That would be the Secretary of State's office, a group of citizens who might be initiating one of these actions, and our own legislative service office. So there's four areas of changes in the statute. First one is at the bottom of page 1, where it talks about the proposed bill shall be in the format required for bills by WS81105, and that's simply saying that the petition or the initiative here must be in the same structure as the bills we work with every day, sections, subsections, paragraphs, subparagraphs, and subdivisions. So it has to be written up and presented that way, and if it isn't, the Secretary of State's office can send it back for more work. So that's what the first bit of editing was about. Then we get down in the middle of page 2, and we'll see that once the bill is finally presentable, there is a conference scheduled by the Secretary of State when it's discussed, and there's a timeline on that. But we put in, I'll call it a gentle fudge factor, if all this deadline falls in the middle of the legislative session and staff just can't pull it off, and it's making everybody crazy to try to do that, then they can put the conference off up to 10 days following the legislative session. So those are both some changes that accommodate government folks. Then the third change, which is over at the bottom of page 3, is more of an accommodation to the citizens themselves who might be proposing the initiative. If the process has gotten set back because it couldn't be done in the legislative session and it had to be done afterwards, then it sets the whole thing back, the 30-day session where they're going out and getting some signatures and addresses and so forth. It gives them more time by setting that whole 30-day process back relative to however much time the conference took place after the end of the legislative session. And then there's a fourth change on the back page, and again, it's relative to that same thing, that the whole grounds for denying the certification of the application could come down to the fact that it isn't done in that proper format of the bills we work with every day, that statute 81105 format. So that would be reason for dismissal. So stand for any questions.
Any discussion on the bill?
Seeing none, call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Swanitzer's motion that the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 30 do pass. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 30 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 45. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 45 from Labor, an act relating to rural health care districts, providing for the issuance of securities by the trustees of a rural health care district, providing for a method of issuance, sale, form, registration, and payment of bonds by rural health care districts, specifying authority of rural health care districts to own hospitals and related facilities, providing for continuation of the tax as specified, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate File 45 engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Dayton, Edmonds, Harvey, Larson, Schwartz, Wilson, Kasperi voted no. be it enacted by the state of Wyoming, signed by Elaine Harvey, chairman.
Good job. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 45 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I will turn the explanation of both of those over to Representative Barlow.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring you Senate File 45, Rural Healthcare Districts. Ladies and gentlemen, this was a request that came to the interim committee in our charge to improve access to health care and availability of health care across our state. Currently, we have basically three configurations of health care availability. We have county hospitals, hospital districts, and rural health care districts. And so what we're doing with this bill, at the request of a particular rural health care district, is giving them some of the same authorities that a hospital district has. And so I'll just walk through the bill very quickly because, ladies and gentlemen, the majority of the bill is quite simply a copy and paste from hospital district authority to rural health care district authority. We have added no new authorities under this. We have just taken what is available to the trustees of a hospital district and applied it to the trustees of a rural health care district. They are separately formed. They're different entities, different mill levy abilities, but they are governed the same, so we want to give them the same tools in their toolbox should they choose to proceed and provide health care within their community. So the first thing that was requested of us and we put forth is the new section, Section 1. Section 1 is a copy and paste, as I said, from the hospital district statutes, and this is regarding securities, whether that be a bond, a warrant, notes, etc., that will do the things that are on page 2, line 5 through 12. And the most important thing is the purpose: acquiring, erecting, constructing, reconstructing, improving, remodeling, furnishing, equipping hospitals and related facilities, as the trustees may determine. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is about delivering the facilities and the care to a community. So as you go through, this is all the mechanics of what they require, what they would have and what hospital districts currently have. And I'll just work through the bill, just page by page, all the way through this first section is all these things that we're transposing from the hospital districts to the rural health care districts. When we get to Section 2, and all of these things are, they can accept grants, they have powers, the charges, the rentals. So when we get to Section 2, which is on page 16, and I know I went through 16 pages rapidly, but ladies and gentlemen, it is almost an exact copy and paste. We've changed rural health care district instead of hospital district. There's some wording changes, but it's largely a copy and paste. When we get to Section 2, then we start talking about some amending some current statute. So on the top of page 17, well, there is a opinion from the chief law enforcement officer of the state that a rural health care district can operate a hospital. We just want it to be clear in statute. So on page 17, lines 6 and 7, we give them that authority. Right now, they are operating clinics. They're operating all kinds of different facilities. And if you say health care facility, it seems rational that a hospital would fit underneath that. But because we were adding this other statute, we wanted to be very clear about they have this authority. And then the third thing that the rural health care districts were, this particular rural health in the request was, and that is page 17, lines 9 through the remainder of the bill. And this has to do with their bonding authority. Now, in a rural health care district, the same way as a hospital district is voted into place, they have a mill levy authority. A hospital district has a basic 3 mills. A rural healthcare district has a basic 2 mills. So they don't have the same revenue authority, but they both have a mill levy authority. They also both have an additional mill levy authority, 3 mills on the hospital district side, 2 mills on the rural healthcare district side. This portion right here has to do with the 708, has to do with the additional 2 mills. So when you put a healthcare district into place, it automatically comes with 2 mills and all of the obligations. The board has to be elected, et cetera, et cetera. Then the board has to go to the county commissioners, ask that an additional mill or two, whatever they choose, whatever they like, be put on the ballot at the next general election. And the county commissioners basically sign off on that and say, yes, we will take that forward. And what current statute says is that you put it on, if it gets approved, then 2 years later you got to get it approved again, and then every 4 years. And that is asynchronous with what a hospital district does. So all we're doing is saying once it's approved, and then it's approved every 4 years instead of having that two-year one in there. So the majority of this bill is one, codifying rural health care district can operate a hospital, and two, giving them the same tools in their toolboxes to deliver health care in their community that a hospital district does. And they have similar authorities otherwise, except for this particular piece of the revenue bonding. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to explain more and take questions. Thank you.
We are on the standing committee amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so what the Senate did, and I apologize. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What the Senate did was they took out the every 4 year, what the body on the other end of the hallway did was on page 17, and they removed our interim committee work and said, nope, there has to be a petition before we actually take another look at this additional mill levy. And in our committee, when we got their version, we went back to the original language and says, no, the voters get to have a look at this every 4 years. It does not, we're not going to have this open-ended deal that requires a petition, et cetera, et cetera. So I would suggest to you that the House position is one of greater accountability than what our colleagues elsewhere gave us. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would submit that we dispense with the Standing Committee Amendment to Senate 545. There's no questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Question being called on the Standing Committee Amendment. All those in favor? Oh, excuse me. You got to move a little faster there. Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Just one question on this. So if part of the reason behind the whole bill is to allow for operation construction of hospitals, I mean, is there any thought, if you've only got 4 years that you're assured that you're going to exist, isn't that really limiting the ability to get financing to do all those things you need to do to operate hospitals?
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So first of all, we should not assume that everyone that has a rural health care district is going to want to have a hospital or try to effectively finance one. I agree, and that's why the first change, I think, is meaningful. What we did to current statute is we go to every 4 years instead of a two, and then fours. But I guess our thought in the committee's position was going to an open-ended requiring a petition and a percentage of the voters, et cetera, to have it regained is a lot of footwork. We ought to just have the go to the ballot every 4 years. But let's be clear. This is for the additional mill. This is not for the primary mill. The primary two mills stays in effect until the rural health care district is dissolved. This is for additional taxing authority that they would go to the voters for. So your standing committee, believe that should be something that is regularly reviewed, not just come up when enough people sign a piece of paper. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No Representative questions. Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe the good bringer of the amendment could elaborate on this, too. But I believe that's also true right now for the second three mills in a regular hospital district. Is that not correct?
Maybe take the second one, too.
Chairman Madden.
My issue is very similar to the Speaker pro tem. What if you had you issue an extra mill and it involves issuing a bond or something like that, and you got a stream of payments you have to make, or buying some long-term capital equipment, lease agreements. I think that, we got to be pretty careful that we don't let a spurious, movement, if you will, interrupt something like that.
Chairman Barlow, or Representative Barlow?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the good representative from the Warm Waters is correct. This is the current language within hospital districts. So it was, like I said, it was our effort to mirror what is currently available to hospital districts. The second question was about the risk of bonding, et cetera, et cetera. Ladies and gentlemen, that was what is occurring in hospital districts all across the state right now. They run that potential risk, and they manage their finances and their bonding authorities on that very thing. Let's be clear. We have, I think there's 9 hospital districts currently in the state. There's 5 rural health care districts. Only one of those rural health care districts is actually considering putting in a hospital. And the community that is being contemplated in, I'm sure they will have questions when we come back to the body of the bill. But our effort was to try to remain synchronous between what the 2 bonding authorities and the tools they had in their toolboxes were, rural health care district and a hospital district. So the good representative is absolutely right. This, what your standing committee is exactly what is available to a hospital district currently, and that's what we're trying to make synchronous. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we are on standing committee number 1. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of the standing committee amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. This bill comes out of my county, who currently has a rural health care district that operates two individual clinics in 2 different communities, and one on the north side and one on the south side of the county. And the reason for doing this, it's so you might ask, well, why don't you just create a hospital district? Well, then you have to unwind a rural health care district, which is voted in by the people under an authority to tax mills, and you have to unwind that, and then you have to create a hospital district, or you would have to create one on top of the other with additional mills that people would see, well, why do you have 2? So it's really hard to unwind those. So basically what our community is just asking for is equal access to the law as hospital districts. And even though there was an attorney general's opinion that we could form a hospital, you know, it's just better to have it in statute. And then there is this revenue lending authority. So it's only on revenue bonds, notes. It's strictly revenue lending authority. And so I guess that's the genesis for this bill. Thank you.
Representative Winters.
Mr. Speaker, not pro or con on the bill itself. I just have a question. I wonder why it is here in the year 2016 that we're looking at these authorities now, when I know in 1994, with the Special District Elections Act, and then it, as you go through the statute, it looks like there were some changes in 1998. I'm just wondering if there was any testimony in committee as to why these are coming now instead of many, many years previous.
Representative Barlow.
Mr. Chairman, I think we should probably be clear that the delivery of health care and the constraints around the delivery of health care are becoming more profound now than they were then, or have been in the past. And I can't say why things were in 94 with this issue, nor in 04, nor in 2 years ago. But I know right now, communities, in fact, 2 new communities in our state in the last general election put these into place, put rural health care districts. They voted for themselves. They voted to tax themselves to provide some level, some type of health care, whether it be an emergency medical service, whether it be a clinic type setup, or whether it be potentially, in this case, a hospital. So this is a community having the tools to actually provide for themselves. And ladies and gentlemen, I guess the committee was convinced that we should give them the full complement that's available, whether it's at a hospital district level or at a rural health care district level. And to the point of the good gentleman from the west side of the state is, we looked at a way to merge these. We looked at some different methodologies so we would have one type of health care district. But because of the differences in mill levy authority, i.e. 3 versus 2, and a couple other things. We just felt like this was a much more straightforward, simpler fix. Give the folks what they want within their community. And like I said, the state is not mandating anything. The state does not mandate that they have to have a revenue bond. They do not mandate anything. All we're doing is providing the tools that they can deliver the care to their community should they so choose. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. You know, one of the reasons that things are changing, and you might not remember, but I think it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I brought a bill that expanded a little authority just to make it clear that we could do certain things that we're currently doing. And the landscape's changed now on reimbursal rates, and we're a rural health care district with a clinic can't get the same reimbursal rates as a critical access hospital can. So it's become an issue of economics and how to fit your medical structure and system and put it in a position that will allow you to capture the best reimbursal rates so you can keep functioning. So it's really about being allowed to have the authority to evolve with the times as times change without having to completely change structures and basically blow up one and create another, which would be very complicated. Thank you.
Is there any more discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise a report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 45 do pass. Those in favor, say aye. Those opposed. Senate File 45 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 42. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 42 from Corporations, an act relating to professions and occupations, amending the Occupational Therapy Practice Act, adding and amending definitions, defining unprofessional conduct, amending the scope of practice, amending licensure and temporary licensure standards, amending standards for reentry into the profession, amending provisions related to foreign license applicants, amending continuing education requirements, specifying who must hold a license, archaic provisions, amending board duties and procedures, penalties, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom referred Senate File 42 engrossed, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Kirkbride, Paxton, Dan's Wanninger. Those who voted no, Representatives Blackburn, Jennings, and Lindholm. Signed by Representative Kirkbride, Vice Chairman, be enacted by the State of Wyoming.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Swanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 42 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'll talk about maybe that first, actually. And I thought the reading clerk did a pretty good job of explaining the whole bill for me. But if you do look on page 12, lines 1 through 4, ladies and gentlemen, this is on the requirements for licensure. If you read the amendment in front of you, it's pretty self-explanatory. We're taking out the American Medical Tech Association in collaboration with the American Occupational Therapy Association, et cetera, and just putting it all now under the American Occupational Therapy Association's Accreditation Council for Occupational Therapy Education. And if it becomes a successor organization later on, and then tying it back in. So we're just trying to take out unnecessary statutes and cleans it up, tightens up the language. So if there's no discussion on the actual standing committee amendment, I'd call for the question on that.
Did you move that, Chairman Swanitzer?
I did, Mr. Chairman, but once again, I would move standing committee amendment number 1, the Senate File 42.
Thank you much for doing that. Any question on the amendment? Question being called. All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed? Motion carried. We're back on the bill. Is there any discussion?
I'd be happy to explain it, Mr. Chairman, at least briefly if I could.
Go ahead.
42 is the Occupational Therapy Practice Act, Many of you will remember we saw this bill last year at the end of general file, and it just kind of ran out of time. And so we took it up as an interim corporations bill. To briefly run through it, we're just updating a practice act that's been about 20 years since we've updated it last. We're adding a couple new definitions, mainly a new definition of occupational therapy. We also have definitions of occupational therapy assistant, occupational therapist, and occupational therapy telehealth. And the other big thing we're doing in the bill on page 6, you'll see that we're adding a whole section on unprofessional conduct and what unprofessional conduct means. So then later on in licensing, you can remove licensure for unprofessional conduct. Running through the bill quickly, the heart of it's on page 9 where it says you need a license to be an occupational therapist. Goes over the rules and regs of doing so, talks about who's affected and who's not, gives you the educational requirements as well as the training requirements that we have an examination there on page 12 under 3340107 to get a license. And then we have a waiver provision and a way to get a temporary license if you're practicing under an occupational therapist. In today's world, many future occupational therapists do rotations and train under for a 3 to 6 month period. And so we're allowing that to happen, all under the provisions of the board to grant either temporary or a limited license there on page 14, section D. Talk about how to get a renewal of a license if people leave the practice. It's currently in statute 5 years you can come back. We're changing that to 1 just because that's more of a national trend and keeping in line with educational requirements, kind of like continuing legal education. You got to stay current with these kind of things. And all the requirements then on rules and reentries up through pages 14 and 15. We talk on page 16 what happens if you're from foreign country as an occupational therapist and you move to Wyoming. It's a different process than if you previously had a license as an American citizen. On page 17, we talk about your suspension or revocation of your license should that ever happen. Then that's where we add in unprofessional conduct and that we've defined back on page 7. We clean up the old statutes on page 19 from 1991 that we don't need anymore. We added one small requirement on page 20 that they have to meet at least twice each year, the board, and they have to have a chairman of their first meeting. Otherwise, that's the majority of the bill. It goes into effect July 1st, 2016. I'd mentioned again it was an interim committee bill. We heard testimony at all three of our meetings, and it was a holdover from the last general session. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Shoot, I forgot your name. My desk mate. Let me look here real quick. Don't look at Representative Halverson. All I could think of was Marty. Give me a break.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to take the opportunity of this bill to have a discussion about this permission to work trend that's getting so carried away in this country and in this state. This is probably, it goes on in every other state, and I'm just wondering when Wyoming is going to back off and say, that's enough. Let the market work. If people go to this occupational therapist and they like him, they'll go back. If they don't, he won't last in business, with or without the state's permission to work. I'll be talking about this as we move along, but I'll be urging a no vote on the bill.
Chairman Swanitzer.
Was it something I said, Mr. Chairman? I would just remind you that this isn't a new practice act. This is just an update of a practice act we've had for over 25 years to try to get more people into the profession and have better educational requirements for them to learn their trade. I certainly appreciate the previous speaker's comments that you can go back to a good occupational therapist, but if they're a bad occupational therapist and they injure you or kill you, not that any of them would, who's licensed, you would have a problem. And so in the Corporations Committee, we deal with these type of things all the time, trying to keep a level playing field and trying to keep a light level of regulation to make sure we have some adequate consumer protection in place in this state. But I'd be happy to answer any questions on the bill, should there be any.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed on page 18 that we're creating a new board, and just wondering about the compensation of those board members. And
if he wants.
What the board's made up of. Thank you.
Chairman Swanser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You'll be happy to know there is no political party split on this board. But this is actually a current board we have in statute. It's five members. The only part on there on page 19, you'll see the previous language that said by July 1st, 1991, the governor shall appoint the board members. Certainly don't need that anymore. And so on page 19, line 13, it just says appointments to the Board of Occupational Therapy are still three-year terms as we move forward. And so we really were just cleaning up the old statutes on this section of the Occupational Therapy Practice Act.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm in favor of this bill. It's my understanding that in the state of Wyoming, we do not train occupational therapists at the bachelor's, master's, or PhD level, which is becoming a standard around the country. Instead, we do have some training for our occupational therapy aides. So I very much think having kind of a state board that is up to date in terms of what the expectations are for occupational therapists is crucial. And so I commend the committee for putting this together, and I'm in favor.
Any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Swanser's motion that with the committee of the whole rise to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 42 do pass. Those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed? Senate File 42 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 57. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 57 from Labor, an act relating to public health and safety, providing a definition for freestanding emergency centers, including freestanding emergency centers in the definition of a health care facility for purposes of licensure as specified. Establishing requirements for freestanding emergency centers, providing licensure exceptions for freestanding emergency centers as specified, specifying licensure requirements for special districts that operate freestanding emergency centers as specified, providing an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate Files 57 in gross, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Barlow, Baldwin, Dayton, Edmonds, Harvey, Kasperic, Larson, Schwartz, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 57 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I will turn the explanation of the amendment and the bill over to Representative Schwartz.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Madam Chairman. I will begin with a brief explanation of the bill before I move on to the amendment. Currently under statute, the Department of Health has a responsibility for the licensing of healthcare facilities. Freestanding emergency centers are not a new concept in this country. They've been around for some time, but they are a new concept in Wyoming, and currently they are not included in the statute. So the purpose of this bill is to include them in the statute so they will be licensed and to define the standards under which they will be licensed. So if you look at the bill, the real meat of it comes on pages 2 and 3 in the exceptions. If you look at exception A, basically what this says is they are not required to get separate licensure if they are part of an existing Wyoming licensed hospital. Then you move on to section B, and here we get into the interesting piece. I forgot a minor element of this bill, which is that we now do currently have two freestanding emergency centers in the county with a field with the same name as this building. And because they now have put these centers in, we need to deal with them in terms of licensing and ensuring they're operating according to good standards. So in Section B, what we are saying is that they essentially have until June of 2019 to come into full compliance, partly because we aren't 100% sure of what the standards will be and make sure they have time to adapt to them. I guess now I have to talk about the amendment. Section C, if we go to the amendment, let's start there. We delete lines 13 through 16 entirely, which is Section C of on page 2. And this, essentially, we felt all it did was say the standards don't go into effect until 2019. We felt that was unnecessary for new emergency freestanding emergency centers that come in. The second part of the amendment and is just changing D and C to accommodate that. On line 22, instead of in D, what we're talking about is that a freestanding emergency center shall accept all patients. They can't only accept patients with insurance or money. We want to make sure they accept all patients, but the original language stated they had to have an adequate hospital transfer program in place. We felt that there was no definition of adequate, so we replaced that word with a transfer program. Then the next is just fixing E, and now becomes D. On page 4, line 6, the final amendment is about how you define a freestanding emergency center and its location being separate from a hospital. And this was merely a language change to make it more clear. So getting back to page 2, as I said, we deleted C. D is, as I said, making sure that they accept all patients, as opposed to, as in some cases with these in associated with private hospitals, often they only accept patients with money. We then move on to Section E on page 3, which states that when they accept a patient, unless it would be unsafe to do so, they transfer that patient within 24 hours. The definition at the bottom of page 3 merely adds freestanding emergency centers to the list of facilities that need to be licensed. I already discussed the next section, which regards transferring of patients. And then at the bottom of page 4, top of page 5, we have other statutes that reference healthcare facilities. We are adding freestanding emergency centers to those definitions. And I believe that sums up the bill. I think it's pretty straightforward that it just adds freestanding emergency centers to our group of facilities to provide healthcare in Wyoming, and I welcome any questions.
We are on the standing committee, number one, bill amendment number one. All those in favor? All those opposed? The standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Is there any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Harvey's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 57 do pass. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 57 has been adopted. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 38.
Chairman.
Oops, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a heads up, ladies and gentlemen. We will finish the day on general file with Senate File 38.
Okay, I think we're back to my good buddy reading the bill. Is that where we are? We're on 57. No, we're on 38. Yeah, that's right. The last one for the day. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Thank you. Senate File 38 from Corporations, an act relating to administration of government, requiring agencies to adopt policies for data collection, access security, and use as specified, directing the state chief information officer to develop guidelines for local governments for data collection, access, security, and use, providing a definition, requiring a report, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 38 engrossed, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, Dan Swanitzer, Gay voted no. Signed by Representative Dan Swanitzer, Chairman, be it enacted by the state of Wyoming.
Boy, he does a good job. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Swanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move in the Committee of the Whole Rise to report to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 38 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I would turn it over to the legislator who's number one in your hearts.
Chairman Harshman?
No.
Oh, Chairman Lindholm.
Oh, promotion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Lindholm.
I appreciate the promotion. Senate File 38, Data Management Policies. This piece of legislation came from the Digital Privacy Task Force over the summer. We studied this as an interim topic, and we looked at, we talked with several different agencies. We talked with municipalities. We talked with counties about how to handle the data that's now seems to be pretty prevalent within government. One of the most interesting aspects of this is everybody's, whether it's PDF files to bills to anything along those lines, everybody's dealing with data now, and there's really no set course or set standard on how that data should be protected, because make no mistake, this is what this piece of legislation is about protecting the data of the citizens within the state of Wyoming. Whether it's through a special district or it's through a major state agency, that data does need to be protected that so nothing untowards can happen to citizens' data. So starting out in Section 1 specifically and only deals with state agencies. And I think that's important to note, because for state agencies, we set out the how and the when and who you're going to work with to obtain this. But if you turn to Section 2, which starts on page 3, the bottom of page 3, we're specifically talking about your local municipalities. We're talking about your counties. We're talking about those type of small type governance, special districts included. So in that area, you can see if you turn to your last page, we're just telling them, listen, we're gonna have our state chief information officer give you some recommendations for guidelines. Because in reality, a lot of these special districts, a lot of these small municipalities, we're looking at a one laptop situation. We're looking at a very very small amount of data. Still has data. That's where they do their banking. That's where they do their number crunching. So there is sensitive data involved, just the same. So. With them, we were concerned about being over the top, I guess, Mr. Chairman, is how you'd say it, and doing something to those type of organizations that would be a financial burden to that small governance, to that those small special districts. So that's why we've set up Section 2 specifically for them, and we worked with the group that represents municipalities, all 99 of them in the state. We worked with the a group that represents counties within the state on this piece of legislation. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Yes, we do. Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a real quick question. So, and I didn't have the opportunity to, the Task Force on Digital Information privacy is going to continue past the end of this fiscal year. Then is it being extended?
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was a 3-year task force, and so we're just going to go into our third year.
Chairman Swanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. If the effective date is July 1st and they have to make their first report September 1st, that's like 60 days. And so I just want to have a warm, fuzzy feeling we're not, that our timeline's not too tight on that.
Minority Floor Leader Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The CIO sits on our Digital Privacy Task Force, and he did not express any concern about the time frame.
Is there any other discussion on the bill?
Chairman, I have a committee of the whole amendment.
Oh, I didn't see that. Sorry about that. I have committee of the whole amendment on Senate File 38, Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 38 and would ask for your favorable consideration. Folks, this is a cleanup amendment. As the good representative who is sometimes number one in our hearts explained, he wasn't listening. Anyway, the Section 2 of the bill is intended to allow the CIO to develop policies for our small municipalities and our special districts. But the term political subdivision also includes school districts and community college districts. And that was not our intent. And so the purpose of the Committee of the Whole Amendment is simply to add a sentence on page 4 at line 11, which clarifies that school districts and community college districts are not covered in Section 2. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1? Question being called. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Committee amendment has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Is there any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative or Chairman Swanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 38 do pass. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. The Senate File 38 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
No, somewhere there's another one here. You've heard the motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Get my stuff out of here and you're on your way.
Messages, reports, Cowboy Joe. The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
The Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 40, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 15, recommended do pass. Representative Berger, move that the House rise and sit again. House Bill 37, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 30, recommended do pass. Senate File 45, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 42, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 57, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 38. Recommended do pass. Signed by Representative Yeagy, Chairman.
Representative Yeagy.
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Congratulations, Representative Yeagy.
Thank you.
Messages from the Senate.
Message number 186, Mr. Speaker. The bill listed below passed the House, or the Senate, I should say, on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 10, Clean Water Revolving Fund Amendments, ayes 28, no 0, 2 excused. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 187, Mr. Speaker. The bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading. House Bill 55, Nurse Licensure Compact-1, ayes 28, 2 excused, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 188, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading. House Bill 56, ayes 23, noes 5, excused 2, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 189, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading. House Bill 59, Healthcare-Statutory Compliance, ayes 28, excused 2, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 31, Omnibus Water Bill Dash Planning, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation and a due pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 44, Obsolete Statutory Language Dash Healthcare, respectfully, report same back to the House with a recommendation and a due pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 75, engrossed Criminal Trespass to Collect Data Dash Amendments. Respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that a due pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 91, State Penal Facilities Review. Respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that a due pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom is referred Senate File 33, engrossed Vehicle Registration-Shell Businesses, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation and a due pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Candidate, Eklund, Laux, Reeder, and Daves Wanitzer. One no vote, Representative Walter, signed by Representative Daves Wanitzer, Chairman.
Committee announcements. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet in 10 minutes in room H37. To hear the following bills: Senate File 43, engrossed; Senate File 61; Senate File 58, engrossed; Senate File 86. And further, we will meet tomorrow, Thursday afternoon, 10 minutes after noon recess, in a different room, H36, to hear Senate File 60, engrossed, and Senate File 73, engrossed.
Chairman Zwanitzer, Dan.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet tomorrow upon noon recess in H-37 to hear the following three bills. Senate File 95, Eye Care Consumer Protection, Senate File 100, Special Districts Emergency Medical Services, and Senate File 99, Emergency Medical Services.
Chairman Northrop.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet after adjournment, about 10 minutes after, in room H-38. We will hear two bills, Senate File 24, Supplemental At-Risk Funding, and Senate File 81, School Capital Construction. Senate File 14 will be heard on Friday. Thank you.
Chairman Zwana Sir Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow night, 10 minutes after adjournment, in H-37 to hear two bills. Senate File 72, 70 miles per hour speed limit, state highways.
Yay.
And Senate File 70, engrossed, off-road recreational vehicles, if introduced and referred.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in H-36 to consider the following bills. Senate File 52, State Shrub. Senate File 53, Large Project Funding. And Senate Joint 4, Labeling of Genetic Engineered Items.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 2 will meet 15 minutes on adjournment for re-referred bills. Senate File 90 engrossed Railroad Quiet Zone. Senate File 12 engrossed Vietnam War Commemoration 2, easy for you to say. And then Senate File 74, State Miners Hospital Board Employees. After that, we're tentatively planning for the Joint Conference Committee on House Bill 1 to resume our meetings. It depends on the other body's timing on the floor. And then, Mr. Speaker, tomorrow your committee number 2 will meet at noon recess to hear the following bills. Senate File 29, engrossed State Construction Department, and Senate File 102, Federal Funds Distribution. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow, February 25th, at noon in room H-38 to consider the following bills. Senate File 50 engrossed, Senate File 6, and Senate File 96 engrossed if introduced.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A reminder that the Minority Caucus will be meeting with the Executive tomorrow at 7 a.m. in the Executive Conference Room.
Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, there will be an email sent out for February 25th's general file, but for you to get started, we will hear Senate File 4, 34, 89, 33, 28, 44, 91, 20, 3, 31, 90, 63, 65, 75, 62, and 2. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. February 25th, 2016.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Representative Blake.
Hey, Mr. Speaker.
Oh. Well, we're adjourned, but go ahead, Representative Winters.
Mr. Speaker.